You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 204 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. My name's Sam Davis.
My name's Tom Jordan.
Oh, this week was a difficult one, wasn't it, Tom? Firstly, we lost 4-0. I played Sunday night football from the Sunday team. We lost, and I had an opposition chant going through my head all weekend.
Yeah, that is going through mine constantly right now.
Not a good one. Bournemouth faced Arsenal at the Vitality Stadium. It didn't go overly well, did it? On YouTube, you can see all of the fan cams in their 40-minute glory. But on this podcast, we'll give you a 10 to 15-minute flavour of the reactions after the game. Tiggs was on the mic.
Here we are outside Dean Court. It is Arsenal 4, Bournemouth 0. It wasn't a great result, not a great performance either. I'm here with PK. Paul, how are you feeling about that?
A little bit numb. It's just a little bit, it was a bit meh, you know. Nobody really shone today. I don't think any of the tactics worked. The press wasn't there, not as a team. And just feel a bit crap about it. Just, it didn't feel like we were at our best at all today.
Abby! How are you? Okay. We're going to move forward a little bit because I'm moving further and further away from Sam, so isn't it?
Just feel a bit empty inside after that one, I think. Hollowed out.
Yeah.
I don't have, by the end, when they said 7 minutes, I was everyone kind of laughing sort of thing and kind of like, what does? Yeah, it was, I think Tom already said a lot of it, but the lack of creativity, and we looked like we could be there for 2 more hours and not score.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell whether or not Arsenal were just very good defensively or we're just really bad at breaking down a defence, because a lot of the time Arsenal at the second half were just playing on the break and, you know, sitting quite all of their players behind them and just breaking really easily as well.
Yeah.
It was just frustrating that nothing went for us at all in that game. We weren't playing well from the start. None of the subs made a difference, I don't think. I can't think of a single player who I would say played well in that performance. Like, no one was kind of like, oh, well, Christy played. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was collectively bad. And I'm getting a bit frustrated with Dango because of the misplaced passes and everything. And I'm trying to be patient, but I'm not 100% sure what he's being told to do. It kind of overcomplicates it a bit.
He's the sort of player, isn't he, that he can turn on, he can do something amazing, but then the simple things, the easy things.
Yes, like just the passes.
The things he doesn't quite go right.
Again, it's a bit like same old, same old. We kind of get into what you call a promising because it's in around the box. But then no one wants to take it on. It's just a lot of passing around, and I'm just like, can someone just pop it in the box or try and dribble? I don't know, do something, because it's just, yeah, it was just not happening today, and it felt like nothing was going to happen. Subs didn't make any difference. Felt a bit for Brooks not getting on today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is, I didn't expect to win, but at the same time, there's a way to lose, and that felt like a non-performance today, and it felt like we stepped on the pitch thinking we were going to lose. We gave away, three sloppy goals.
Yeah.
The two penalties were just... The second one in particular was really stupid.
Yeah.
Like, the first one, I could kind of see it, but the second one was moronic. And the first goal was just sloppy defending, and I'm not sure what Neto and the defenders were doing, really. But
no, it's an interesting place to be, isn't it? In that I think a lot of people would look at that defence, including the goalkeeper on paper, and go, wow, this is the best defence goalkeeper, that we've had collectively since probably, maybe even better than what we had under Eddie Howe when we first got promoted. So, Why is it not clicking? Why are we conceding the goals so easily? Is it just the way that we're playing football?
I'm not sure. I don't have an answer for it, because it feels like we are so... It feels like we're kind of the worst of both things at both ends in that game. We were completely open. We've said this. Open in midfield, because we're lacking kind of that Lerma at the moment in there. Yeah. And Adams obviously wasn't in the squad today. But we're too easy to play through. And Arsenal were very kind of... easily get into our box, I think, and then we know we're quite open, so I think the panic sets in, and that's when like these ditch tackles come in, and maybe the fluster, you could sell the panic was setting in. But equally, on the other end, nobody wants to have a shot, nobody wants to take it first time, and I'm like, it's not gonna go in itself, just have a go, guys, It won't. It felt like a bit under O'Neill when I kept saying we want to walk it into the goal. It's like we just need, but it's not going to happen. You need to make something happen. And it just feels like there's no synergy kind of in our attack at the moment. And defensively, it's flustered. I don't think there's much structure there.
Hi, Ollie. How you doing, bud?
Well, not very good after that one. I mean, battle of the Basque boys. We didn't play well, did we? I'd say that Arsenal weren't even probably on their A game. I think they were definitely good, not as good as they can be, but I think we were just awful, and that is probably the worst performance we've had all season, especially with the two penalties given away. That makes it three penalties in two games for Arsenal, which is just, I mean, they know how to get a penalty. Of course, they're so good from set pieces, and of course we're not. It was a recipe for disaster, really.
So Tom said earlier, that he said, a bit like you, that Arsenal were in third gear, essentially, for the whole game.
Yeah.
What gear were we in, do you think? Were we being competitive enough there? Could we be better? Are things getting worse?
I think we were probably in neutral, if not reverse, I mean, under O'Neill, it was definitely... It was hard times, but I mean... We know that Iraola is like a good coach, but what is the problem? We genuinely don't know. Because he's got his assistant now, hasn't he? He's beaten big teams in the past. He's beaten Barcelona. He's beaten the big ones in La Liga. But at the end of the day, it is Arsenal.
Yeah.
You don't finish second in the Premier League for no reason.
No, and one up over City now, aren't they?
Yeah.
After that, because City losing today.
Which is disgraceful, as they Wolves had one shot and they scored two goals.
But then, I wonder what... I haven't seen anything but the Wolves game. I wonder where that shot came from, because I was talking to Abby, we're not shooting, are we? We're not...
No.
Maybe we need to make our own luck. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as Abby said, trying to walk it into the goal, and at this level, you just can't do that, especially against the opposition that we're playing against. And I thought that was... It might have been a tactical thing, or it might have been a player thing, but either way, we need to just get rid of it, because we can't play like that and expect to win any games.
Yeah.
And the next three are just such an important three fixtures for us. In fact, I think the next three games will show how our season will end.
Wow, okay.
Arsenal.
Thanks, Ollie. All right, all the best. See you soon, buddy.
Honestly, fair enough. They won 4-0, swear and square.
Hey, man, you're right, bud.
I'm okay. Well, yeah. I'm underwhelmed, I like my adjectives. Underwhelmed is the one today, I'd say.
Underwhelmed, yeah.
It's because Iraola came in, and we knew that he's beaten all these good sides like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, etc.
Really good point.
at the start of this season, we haven't laid a glove on any of the teams that we've lost to. Like, Liverpool, we deserve to lose. Spurs, we deserve to lose. Brighton, in the grand scheme of things, we did. And today, we did. And it just... I know that these are the games that we don't need to win to have a good finish, but it's coming to the stage where if we don't beat Everton, who obviously, I know they've lost to Luton today, but they beat Brentford last week, so know that they can play well. If we lose to Everton, lose to Wolves, who have, you know, they've showed they can play football against Man City today, etc., then it becomes a bit of a spiral of when are we going to actually play well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you make there. I mean, he kind of got the reputation of not having necessarily the best players at previous clubs he's at, but he created a mentality and a siege and a tactic that allowed them to get results against those bigger teams.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like you're, like you said, that we're seeing this.
Yeah.
So, oh, are we going backwards a little bit, Ben? You know, because I feel that, you know, we could all see the good signs,
yeah,
despite not getting the results, but after today's result, it feels like a step backwards.
And I know that there's a saying, you need to go back to go forward, and it feels like we've taken that backward step and now we're coming up to the crucial month where we need to win those games to go forward. So obviously, I know everyone was expecting that after these seven games we're in around the relegation zone, probably have not won many games. Obviously, I know we've not won any games at all, but it's just that feeling that when you do lose, and in the manner that you lose, that it's so disappointing. Because I don't even know if we had a shot on target today. Maybe we had one and Raya had nothing to do. I don't know. Everyone's going on about how important the next month is, but then after those three games that are winnable, we've got Man City and Newcastle. So the hard games aren't going to stop coming, and I know it's a tough league, but to be able to create momentum to go into these easier games, so-called easier games, you need to at least play well against these good sides, which is what we did last season. We played well against Arsenal and teams like that last season away, and then that continued us to carry on a bit of form into April. Whereas it doesn't seem like we've done that. And I went on last season about O'Neill's identity. I can't identify a massive change in style. I was able to the other day in the second half, but I still feel like we're very reliant on Solanke and reliant on a couple of players producing individual magic. Like, Philip Billing hasn't scored yet this season, and we still haven't won a game. I feel like kind of correlates.
Yep.
So we just got to wait and see. I'm still going to give him time. I'm not Areola out. I'm not saying we're going to go down, but we just need something to click soon. And if it doesn't, then I think we are in a spot bother. But I'm not going to say anything too crazy yet, as you know, we're only seven games in or six games in. So yeah.
Hi, Andy.
All right.
You're going to catch Andy in our match day vlog that will be out tomorrow morning, and he said some things in there. How are you feeling now? Do you feel any different?
A bit deflated. Yeah. Arsenal are better than us. I don't think you'd find any Bournemouth fan who would say Arsenal are not better than us, but that doesn't excuse some of the performances we saw out there today. And my biggest takeaway is, are we a bit too nice? Do we go out there and we see that they've got probably the best central midfield pairing in the league in Odegaard and Rice, and we just sit off them? I can't remember seeing Odegaard get tackled today. His shirt and his hair was not out of place at the end of the game.
That's true.
Billingham and Cook are a lot of things, but they're not the sort of tigerish midfield pair that are ever going to dominate a midfield like that. And it's just like we sat off them and let them have time. And in the first half, there was a little bit of criticism for the guys around me that we let Raya play the ball out and pick his pass. I don't really agree with that, because if we press too hard, we're going to get picked apart anyway. But once the ball got into the more advanced areas of the park, and players like Odegaard and Saka get on it, we're just a little bit too nice. It's strange. I don't really think we've got partnerships in the same way that they have partnerships. And
yeah.
We've got all these wide forwards who we're all quite excited about, and when the inevitable 5-0 win comes along, we'll all be really, really thrilled with how they're playing. But they've got no rapport with the fullbacks, and so the fullbacks are playing in a certain way, and then they're looking for a pass, and Tavernier might not make the same run that Sinisterra makes or that Semenyo make, and we just end up with a tame conceded throw-in. And it's just like, it's almost like 11 strangers out there that have never met each other before. I'd just like us to see us be just a little bit more nasty. And that sort of sums up by the fact that Havertz is allowed to take the penalty. Havertz, a player that it's well publicised that he's not popular with the fans, he's not that popular with the players. And we let him take a penalty without being in his face, just trying to put him off a little bit. And he rolls the penalty in, and then he dominates the game until he goes off. It's just let's just be a little bit nastier. Lerma was a bit nasty. Harry Arter was a bit nasty. Where's that little bit of steel? It's not there at the moment. I think when we find that, the time will come. Maybe it's Adams. We'll see.
We'll see indeed. Thank you,
all
mate.
Right.
That was
cheers.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
You,
yeah, we move on. We've got some good winnable fixtures coming up, or even drawable, or something. Just something, please. See you soon. Bye.
Oh, it's been a difficult one, mate. It's been a difficult one. It was a horrible game. Singing the chants of the opposition, ringing around my head all weekend, even though I did want it to be. It's been hard. And then looking at some of the social media reaction as well. However, perspective is needed. And on this show, we will try to bring it. At the same time, though, it's important to realise that there can be frustrations as well. And we'll echo them absolutely.
Yeah, for sure, mate. I think no one expected us to get anything, probably including ourselves, if we're honest. But it was the matter of the performance in the game and the goals we conceded and all of that stuff. So, yeah, it was a real frustrating one. But as you say, there's bigger picture and all that stuff that we spoke about at the moment, and we'll dive into it a little bit. But, yeah, feeling really frustrated and a bit, God, I've got to talk about this game again right now. But, yeah, it is what it is.
We're pleased to announce that this season, Back in the Net is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game.
Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Bournemouth fixture over the 23-24 season.
Yeah, and with 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter whether you're in Bournemouth or
Blythe.
Blythe. That brings me PTSD
for him, right?
Blythe Spartans. But you can catch every single minute of the action there.
Yes, keep an eye out during the season for events, offers, content and competitions that put you closer to the action.
The Green King Sport app, we're going to be talking about it on future episodes, but if you download that, that's really good because you've got your season ticket there, which enables you to have 10% off drinks as well. And later on in the season, we'll chuck you a special code, like we've done before, where you can get a free drink. You get a free birthday drink as well. Our next game is in November. That's the one on TV, sorry. That's on Sky Sports. That's Newcastle, is it?
Yes.
So if you haven't got a ticket for it, the next best way to watch it is at your local Green King Sports Pub. Sky Sports, TNT, Amazon, all of it is at your local Green King Sport Pub. So on this podcast, we perhaps overly won't be going into things minute by minute in a chronological fashion.
Thank you.
We will kick off with a few facts, though. The first fact is, here's the league table. And it's not pretty viewing, is it? It's pretty viewing for Man City, obviously, despite their loss at the weekend. It's pretty viewing for Spurs, despite their somehow win weekend. And then it's pretty reading for Arsenal as well. But as you look down,
yeah,
that doesn't look good with Bournemouth being in the relegation zone for the first time this season.
Yeah, I think I anticipated, looking at the fixtures, that we'd probably be in it.
Yeah.
As we've spoken off about the start of the season we've had fixture-wise. But we got so close to me. There was one more game in terms of them horrible fixtures that we had to get through. And I kind of looked at it and thought, I don't see any of the three that are below us winning, actually. So we'll probably be out of it, which is quite good. But then obviously Luton got a big win. And yeah, we've dropped into it, mate. But here's what it is at this stage of the season. Doesn't matter too much. Don't think we were in it for a while last season. Then we ended up bottom.
Yeah.
Kind of within the next year, I think. Yeah. And we still managed to get out of it comfortably. So yeah, don't take too much notice of it. But yeah, a few results didn't go great for us at the weekend.
No, they didn't. This is the baseline tracker table from the other 14 where it shows Bournemouth actually in a considerably healthier position on zero. So people have been asking about this and I'll give you the explanation now. So the point system for the baseline tracker table is based on the fact that the 13 home games against the rest of the other 14 are most likely for scoring points, which makes sense, right? So these 13 games give a baseline par score of 39 points. So points dropped in those home games against the other 14 count as negative relative to the baseline. But any points gained in away games and against the big six, either home and away, will also count positive to the baseline as well. So there you can see Everton still in dire straits, Brentford, Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United all below us.
Yeah.
Bournemouth on 0 points. Now, I do want to bring in some perspective for this reason, using this like algorithm. And we're not saying that this is right, this is wrong, but let's just put it into context. So when Gary O'Neill got given the permanent job in December, so just before the World Cup, this is where Bournemouth were at on the baseline tracker table. This was week 16 last season. We were on -2. And then come February, so 7 weeks later, week 23, we were on -9.
Yeah.
So 7 dropped points, really.
And it shows how long the season, if you go back up to that one that was just before the World Cup, I think you said. You look at all the teams, look at that bottom four, none of them went down.
Mm.
None of them went down. Southampton leads, Leicester on +2 at the time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it shows how long the season is. But yeah, it's a good little, what's the word? It's a good little base, isn't it? Mm. Makes sense, baseline tracker, to just have a little bit of a see how you're getting on. And I think you see like West Ham this season are on like +10 or something ridiculous. And that's because they went to places like Brighton and won and all this different stuff. They've had some big wins. So, yeah, it's a good little thing to look at. But, yeah, long season, mate.
But is it completely relevant to compare to last season's results, though? Because a lot of people have been saying that. You can talk about the fact that we're 3 points up this season over the equivalent games last season, but we've got a different squad, we've got a different manager. Yeah. Are comparisons futile at this point in time?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because everything's different. So, yeah, it's a little bit irrelevant. But equally, there's a small sample size. The season's only just started. So that's all you can really go off. What else? You try and base opinions off certain things. And at the end of the day, when you've lost the games you've lost, we've lost 4 games to the top six. So, you know, you've got to kind of put it a bit perspective. But equally, I've said on the reverse side, you've got to throw games away. When we were in... you know, really in the mud last season, we went to Tottenham 1 and beat Liverpool. Well, we weren't calling them 3 years. They were massive 6 points, weren't they? So, yeah, it is what it is. You know, everyone's going to have different theories behind it and different reasoning to kind of argue their point, I guess. The fact is we haven't won yet, and that's whoever you're playing that many games, you want to be able to win a football match. But we all knew the fixtures, it was going to be difficult to do that.
There's a simmering frustration I sense on social media. It's not quite spilling over, but I think that frustration was exacerbated by the fact that our former manager, Gary O'Neill, got a well-deserved win against Manchester City. His pragmatic style, whilst it may not work against the likes of, you know, West Ham at home like last season, sometimes it can have some good effect when you're playing the top six. We knew that when we played Spurs, Liverpool.
Yeah.
He's done it against Manchester City. So, you know what? As much as we are excited and happy with Andomi Iraola's appointment, I know there's some at the moment a bit frustrated, which I get. You've got to pay credit to Gary for that. And especially after the rough ride he's had with some of the decisions that he's faced, you know, not least that first match week against Man United.
Yeah, exactly. And a few decisions have got against him, like they did with us. But, yeah, so he's earned that. Like I say, they got battered as expected, but they finished their dinner and kept the door closed. So fair play to him. And that was fine by me. I mean, obviously you have a laugh at yourself because bloody hell, Gary Neal's had one over us there. But I'd rather him beat Man City than beat the teams in and around us. Mm. You know, I don't care if they take points off City. I don't want them to be getting, you know, the big 6-pointer games. That's what I don't want them to win. Wolves, because I like to think we'll be competing with Wolves. If they want to beat City, that's fine.
You know the old song, what a difference a day makes. What a difference a minute makes. 1:59 on Saturday, right? Mm. I was hearing rumours that Dom Solanke might be starting. So I was thinking, yes. And I was thinking in my head, no Saka.
No Rice.
No Saliba.
Yeah.
Everyone was playing. Mikel Arteta, I would say he's lying, but he's very good at spinning these little myths truths every so often. And I for one, was feeling not optimistic, but very hopeful. But then I saw that team that Arsenal had. Glad that we had Solanke, but Arsenal's team looked very strong, and I knew that we were in for a hell of an afternoon.
Yeah, I'd probably say barring, I mean, obviously everyone can have their opinions on the goalkeeper, but I'd probably say barring Arsenal fans would probably put Jesus for the middle and then have Martinelli fit.
Yeah.
Apart from that, they're pretty much full strength there. So, yeah, that was always going to be difficult for us. But as you say, I was pleased Dom was fit. But they'd done kind of what we alluded to in the preview, where they got them players out there to get the job done, and then they could take them off, which is exactly what they did. I think they all come off, didn't they? Rice, Saka, they all come off. So, yeah, they kind of knew what they were doing there, and obviously it worked for them. But, been very good for us.
It wasn't. But that said, I thought we started the game relatively all right. I thought...
Well, that's how we were, right?
Yeah, we almost took the game to them a little bit. Arsenal didn't look that incredible. They didn't seem to have much of the ball, actually. They were quite passive, but then... They played the game to a T, really. They were making us work hard to create our chances. Interestingly, when I watched Match of the Day back, they didn't show any of the moments that I thought were the closest moments for us scoring, like Dom Solanke getting a shot in or nearly and it rebounding off his own foot for a ball with... was it a goal kick in the end? Probably. When Phil Beale had a chance when he was put through, but I don't know if this was lazy from Match of the Day, but they only seemed to concentrate on the shots on goal, one of which was Ryan Christie's. And I was right behind that, and I knew that Rye was saving that all day long because it was a weak shot, really. He did stretch, and it was our only shot on target, but I think that was the least best chance, really.
Yeah, you're probably right. But like you say, it was more we would get up to that final third and then think something's happening there, and then probably looking at it, you go, wish we'd pulled the trigger a little bit more, just work the opening a bit better. That's what we've got to look at. Equally, from an Arsenal perspective, they defended it very well. They always looked like they were in there. in their positions really well, and we couldn't quite carve an opening. We'd get to the box all right, and then we just seemed to fluff our lines a little bit. But as you say, first 10-15, I thought, it's not a lot in the game there. We're doing all right. We're not that threatening, but neither are they, so I'm happy with that. And they put one ball in the box, and they're 1-0 up. And then it felt like from ever since that moment, as soon as that goal went in, that was it. We were hopeless.
It was the ball to Jesus, who headed it towards goal. I thought wasn't sure if he was trying to hit the woodwork or score, but I thought he's maybe trying to knock it back. He went from that angle, right? Just came off his head wrong, but right in the end. And it came off the woodwork, and then
unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, Neto had committed to the dive. He was inside the net, sprawled on the floor basically, and little cheeky Saka was there at the right time just to easily nod it in. And cue delirium in parts of the East Stand, North Stand, South Stand, and every stand. Yeah. Mate, there were so many Arsenal fans littered throughout. Look, I get hospitality. I can appreciate that because, you know, that's a common thing. It's happened for years that away fans have hospitality. I think Robbie on the AFTV player rating said it felt like that there were, it was like half and half almost in terms of the Arsenal fans and hospitality. I kind of get it in hospitality. And I think that when they're in the main stand, on the whole, I think they're pretty well behaved. But what I cannot tolerate or abide by is the fact that somehow they've managed to get into other parts of the ground. Now, we know that King's Plaza, the new hospitality scheme, basically get pissed up in a marquee for 2.5 hours before the game, was you just needed a point for that. You could get tickets for our pre-season friendlies and get on the points ladder, though. Back in July, so due diligence was there to make sure that these fans weren't Arsenal fans? I don't know. I think an email went out by the sounds of it. But so, South Stand, there were Arsenal fans in there. North Stand, there were. Yep. East Stand, Main Stand. People are buying tickets and they must be selling them on to Arsenal fans. They must be.
Well, yeah, if you're thinking about it, you go for them friendlies, you see the fact that if you go to a friendly, you get a point. So if I was a neutral that lived in Bournemouth, I would definitely have done that and then just sell them on. So the away fans are all a ticket and you make some money out of it. So yeah, the club don't seem to give two hoots about it because it gets people in there. It's what it is. Frustrating. I hate this thing of moaning about no atmosphere at home. What would you expect when there's so many bloody away fans in there?
They were all well behaved, you've got to say. I didn't see anything. And like, Arsenal fans, I think, are some of the best fans in terms of their behaviour. I found when they were Dean Court, I haven't seen anything sort of kicking off, and fair play to them for that. But from our perspective, like you say, fans are always have already got squeezed out of our own club bar into a small marquee, and the increase in hospitality, and now, like you say, the increase in away fans sitting amongst us. I think at some point there is a danger that it could turn nasty.
It will at some point. That's when it will get highlighted more.
Someone has had a few pints. It could be a PR catastrophe, and I think the club needs to kind of like analyse this, audit this, and there should be a duty of care for our own supporters, really, because one day it could kick off and this won't blow over. I do almost feel there should be a statement from the club on it. I don't know if Cherry's Trust are pursuing it, but the thing is, they need to talk about the situation, what they're going to do to prevent it in future. Let us know the numbers of match accounts that have been banned as a result of this. Because I mean, I'm sure the stewards must have taken down seat numbers. Surely they got to do their jobs, right? So yeah, I'm interested to see what happens. But look, a lot of the stadium was dancing to that goal, and it felt like that was the moment that just changed the whole the dynamic of the game, really. Because at that point, after, I didn't really see us
now
getting back into it. Arsenal just controlled it, and Declan Rice, he
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
He didn't even seem to do much, but he just controlled it. He's so calm on the ball.
Yeah, brilliant, and Ødegaard as well. But that's what I felt, mate. The moment that goal went in, it felt like subconsciously, they wouldn't have meant to, but it felt like the players just went, oh, that's that. Because it was kind of like, if you remember Anfield, we took the lead, Brighton, we took the lead. And you got something to hang on to there, and the game plan's going well. When you concede first in that sort of game, when you're doing okay, probably think, we've got to get two now and keep the door closed against Arsenal. Oof, it's going to be tricky now. It felt like that, because they were doing okay for 15 minutes, not stuffing out the lads a little bit, and it calmed Arsenal down to just play their stuff. And that's what they did. But then obviously either side of half time, it's individual, you know, calamities really from us has given them the game, unfortunately. But we never looked like scoring either.
Our average position indicated that we were certainly giving it a go. Take a look at that. We only had like two players in our own half.
Mm.
So we were trying to take the game to Arsenal. So in many ways, you can respect that Andoni Iraola's sticking to his philosophy. But in the same breath, you think there's a little bit of naivety there, because surely you've got to be a little bit purposeful and pragmatic when you're playing a side as good as Arsenal. But he was trusting in his squad to deliver. But it's fair to say, technically, they did not do that.
No, and I think if you're going to play that way, we've all been screaming for it. I want to see us be a bit more progressive in our play and going for teams. But if you're going to do that and you're going to lose 4-0, which we aren't willing did, you want to go, yeah, but you know they were just too good. They finished a chance, we didn't. But we had one shot on target. So we're playing open and attacking football, but we didn't have anything to show for it, and we still leaked it back. I mean, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was just one of them. I think in most of the games I've seen bits, but in this one I just really didn't. It was poor all over the pitch, to be honest with you, mate, apart from probably the 15 was okay. And then, as I say, it just all went downhill from there, and it was a real struggle, real hard watch.
I'm just looking at these goal times on the match timeline, mate. So, do you remember...
Oh, yeah, listen.
Yeah. Do you remember last week?
Mm.
You didn't see Brighton's equaliser. You didn't see Brighton take the lead.
Mm.
I'm guessing you probably didn't see...
Definitely didn't see the
second goal.
I saw the third.
Yeah, you did see the third. Yeah, back in time for the third.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I'm always at home games. It's quite comfortable. I'm always back in there as soon as the whistle goes for the second half. So yeah, I saw that one. But yeah, the one before half time, I was having a beer and like just see everyone was like standing over, like looking. And I thought, what's going on here? And then realised they got a pen. And that was that. But obviously watched it back and it was definitely a pen. Everyone was saying it was definitely a pen as well. Yeah, real killer right half time. And then we start the second half and you never know, it 2-0. You need the next goal. But we just decided to give him another one. It was two ridiculous tackles from Aarons and Christie. Just idiotic, really.
I'm not going to defend Christie, but I am. The challenge was awful. The challenge, but you know what? And this is not a comparison because I play Sunday night football and sometimes I get so frustrated with my team. So I just get the ball clear, just do the basics. And the ball was in our box.
Yeah.
You've been pinging it about for ages. We failed to clear on so many different occasions.
Yeah, we did.
And he just thought, I'm gonna have a go, and I'm gonna run in like a bullet in a china shop and just try to win the ball. He gets it, the timing completely wrong. But I sense there was a lot of frustration there.
Yeah.
The fact that we just couldn't clear our lines. In fact, I'm sort of, in a way, I'm like, well done for taking responsibility because obviously it means a lot to you. But that was a bad challenge, and my God, that was a penalty all day long. I don't think many Bulwer fans were complaining. I don't know what Christie was complaining to the ref.
He started saying, watch it back, didn't he? I could see him, Melvin, watch it back. I was thinking, you don't want him to watch it back, Christie, mate. It was horrific, and I'm not having that from you. I get the point you're saying. I do get the point, but that's crap. Do that in the middle of the pitch. For both goals, both penalties, sorry, they're not in. They're not about to score. You know, it's not like a tackle because they could score it. They're not really going anywhere. So, yeah, I thought it was poor. And you're less than 10 minutes into the second half. You've just given them the game.
Give yourself a chance, yeah. So Saka obviously gave Odegaard. I mean, they sort of share penalty. I think Saka's the main penalty taker, but Odegaard often pops up with a pen.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't know if they alternate it, but probably the right thing to do based on the fact that he scored in the North London derby. And I'm sure that Neto would have had on his water bottle where everyone goes. But maybe the second penalty taker, Neto, would not have known because it was given to Kai Havertz. And a player that's been not under fire, but there's a lot of expectation. He's got a price tag, and he's needed that goal. And he popped up and scored the pen. And cue that song that's been going on in my head, your head, everyone's head all weekend. Kai Havertz scores again.
They went on for ages, didn't they?
It went on for ages.
They were loud in there.
It's good. It was good. And Arsenal fans were good, by the way.
Yeah, they were very good. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a myth, to be honest, since Arteta's come in. I think the Emirates is always good, even though people talk about Library is much better than a lot of the other big teams.
Mm.
And yeah, for away fans' point of view, I mean, it helps when you're winning so comfortably. But they got it bouncing in there, and we can really compete with it. We didn't really bother, did we? Try to make an atmosphere ourselves after that third. But yeah, I think once it comes off, that's a really good decision to get his kind of confidence up a little bit, just get him off the mark, because I think it's a difficult one. It's all the price tag. I probably don't think he's worth that sort of money, but yeah, sometimes you look at, say, City's bench, and Calvin Phillips is always on it, for example. He costs a lot of money. But they know that he's coming for a backup. Unfortunately, the money that's going around at the moment, a rotation player at 60 million, and what do you expect from the big boys?
That's not his fault that he was valued at that amount of money. So he is under pressure.
I thought he played one in the game, actually.
And I thought he did. I thought their defence, like, on the whole, you know, Saliba's a Rolls Royce.
Yeah,
I thought he's great. And throughout the side, you know, Saka was brilliant on one side. And, you know, everyone they brought in as well. I thought Tomiyasu did well when he came on, Reece Nelson.
Yeah.
Emil Smith Rowe nearly got on the end of his chance, as we know later on.
Yeah.
That was a terrible moment of football. But we made a couple of substitutions with Tavernier and Cliver coming off. So this is this kind of winger rotation thing.
Off to the alley. Yeah.
Dongo Ouattara.
That's awful, eh?
I don't get it, really. I don't understand. Like, I think you said, or someone said on the fan cams, maybe it was Kirk after Brighton, or you said the same thing as well on the second look and stuff. Like, he does these really intricate things that are brilliant. He comes off, but not like simple things like your balls to feet. And even in the first 30 seconds, I think you said he gave it away
twice.
Twice.
Yeah, the two times he got the ball. I think I was more frustrated that, you know, I knew then subs were coming, the winners. And I thought, well, let's get Sinny on, because you need to give him some minutes at some point. I don't understand how Ouattara has made himself a better option than David Brooks and Antoine Semenyo to come on the pitch. I haven't got a clue. What's Semenyo come on about 5 minutes to go? He was he changed the game against West Ham. Yeah. He was our best player at Anfield. Why is he suddenly not playing, not coming on earlier? I couldn't believe that when I looked over and thought, how is it Ouattara? But, you know, I don't have a go at him. It's also another reason is that he didn't have any pre-season. He was injured the whole time, wasn't he? And then he randomly started that game, and you thought, okay, he's a bit rusty. Why is he suddenly getting bought in for loads of minutes? Like, he played a full game against Stoke as well, I think. But yeah, I couldn't get my head around it because he doesn't have the impact that Semenyo has. And I think what we were saying earlier was it was that final bit. Well, you've got David Brooks who can open a door. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, I didn't understand that that substitution. I don't think Dunga was very good. Not that Sinisterra was brilliant. He tried to run at people, but none of the subs made any sort of impact, to be fair.
It was very congested. It was really congested. And I found that, I don't know if the tactic was slightly tweaked this week or not, but when I thought of Andoni Areola football, it's all about the overlapping fullbacks, but maybe they just weren't instructed to do that. And you can see maybe why.
Yeah, yeah.
You're playing Arsenal, you're not going to leave two at the back. Sometimes a defensive midfielder drops to make it three. I didn't really see much of that because there wasn't much overlapping going on. So yeah, there was a lot of, you know, it was very contained, I thought. And Luis Sinisterra, whenever he got the ball, there were always two or three men in front of him, so he never had a free run.
Yeah.
We got forward a couple of times and created near moments, but never ones that really tested the keeper, you got to say, side netting a couple of times and stuff.
No.
Jay Rothwell came on a bit later on, came on for Phil Bill. They made some substitutions, and like we said, Emil Smith-Rowe had a chance that Neto
should have scored
hit around his post. I mean, there were about three or four fouls in the build-up.
On a rugby tackle.
Michael Soles would be fair play for letting the game carry on. But how we didn't clear that, and then it fell to Smith-Rowe, tried to curl it around, slide
decent pass, to be fair.
Yeah, good save. But then they did score in that net, and it was a player that scored three for Arsenal, two of which have been against Bournemouth. Local lad, Ben White, popped up with a headed goal to an Odegaard free kick. It got briefly checked. I don't know if it was even close, but
yeah, I can believe it was getting checked. Yeah, typical Ben White of so frustrated. I've got some of his family on Facebook, and they obviously post share stuff when he scores. Is anyone like us? Well, for God's sake, he must love it. He must love it. But yeah, it was a good header, to be fair. He had a good game, but it was, if you ever want to, you know, sum it all up, the game's dead. Everyone groaned when it was it 7 minutes added? Everyone was like, really? And then they get one more set piece. And I think you actually say it on the vlog, they go, I wouldn't be surprised if this goes in. It's just shocking defending, just an easy header. It was poor. And that was the, just summed up our game, really. Really, really frustrating one. And everything went wrong in terms of, you know, we've given them two penalties, they've scored a set piece, we haven't really created anything. It was unfortunately, like I say, we're going to talk about the bigger picture and all that stuff, but this second looks about the Arsenal game, and it was, nothing really went right, mate. I'm trying to think, is there a positive? I mean, when I done the player ratings on the Telegram, I thought, well, I can't just not do about that. Yeah. I think I gave two players 6 out of 10, and that was the best.
Really?
Lewis Cook, probably, and maybe Tav, because he tries to stretch him for an hour. But it's hard to find any sort of positive, because even our best player, Lewis Cook, that won his best performance. I mean, I just didn't think there was any real positive to come out of the game. I'm scratching my head for one.
Do you want to know the best rated who scored?
Oh, no, I was trying to get it.
I think.
I done well last game, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You got Tavernier, bang on.
It's because I'm working out now how they judge it. So the annoying thing in my head is, I know that the conceding four would have been bad for Neto, but any save does really well. So he's probably going to be higher than you expect. Like, just wouldn't have thought he'd be top, they're letting him fall. Maybe it is Lewis. Best player on the pitch has got to be Ødegaard. His goal and assist. Yeah, it is.
So
was it Lewis? Yeah, it wasn't Lewis.
It was Neto, 6.6. So like you say.
Yeah, it helps because he made a few saves.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with stuff like that. And and obviously like Ben White gets a really high rating, just kept clean sheet and scored.
Yeah.
But Ødegaard, yeah, goal and assist. And I thought he was brilliant. I thought him and Rice in that midfield, we just couldn't cope with it, mate. And I think I said it in the preview, as easy in hindsight, I would have liked to have seen Lewis and Rothwell in there just to give us a bit more protection, maybe. I know he trialled kind of shifting Christian Billing around, didn't really work. But yeah, there are not too many surprises there with the ratings, I guess.
Those are the match stats that you can see on screen if you're watching on YouTube. We had 42.4% possession, 4 shots, 3 of which were on target, only one of them on, and there's the shot board as well.
I know this sounds stupid, but I'd like to think you and the viewers, listeners will get my point. I don't like that we've got no yellow cards in that game. It's very rare that we don't get a yellow card, and I think that is a weird but a good way to show why we're most frustrated after this game. Yeah. There's no... You're playing Arsenal, you've lost 4-0. Have some bloody fight about you.
Yeah.
Make it... I mean, don't get me wrong, if Smith Rowe don't go through, Celeste's probably going to get a yellow, like you mentioned, and brought it back. But I just thought there wasn't really any... I never felt like we were going to get a yellow because there were no real bite and tackles, and you think, do you know what I mean? It was... You want your team to get a few yellows in that sort of game because they're putting up a bit of a scrap. And yeah, the fact that we never looked like getting a yellow, I think summed it up, that we went through emotions and didn't really... They were just like walking around. They were in... Yeah, didn't have to get out of first gear, did they, really?
There's been a certain amount of hysterical behaviour on the timelines from a minority of Bournemouth fans, but as it goes with X and Facebook or whatever, if those posts are interactive with or replied to or whatever, they get bumped up the timeline rather than anyone who's maybe got a more neutral view of things. Therefore, it sort of exacerbated it a little bit and makes it look like the discontent is probably worse than what it is. There are... a selection of people, a handful, questioning Iraola and his future at the club. There's a few references to we shouldn't have got rid of Gary O'Neill and stuff like that. And so I think we need to put it into perspective. And I'm tired of saying it, but look, whilst we've said it's incomparable, equivalent games last season, 0 points in all but the Arsenal game and maybe the Spurs game. I think we've been competitive.
Oh yeah, definitely.
In all of them. Yeah. Spurs at times we threatened, but that Arsenal game, you know, we definitely know we weren't competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an unfortunate slip from Kirkes at Brentford to give them the point. It was a really good showing at Liverpool. We grew stronger into the Chelsea game.
Well, Liverpool never should have had a penalty.
No, they shouldn't have had a penalty. We are lacking clinicality, yes, but we are getting into the right areas. And apart from the last game, there is a clear identity. So really, I'm looking at it like, yes, we got back. This is no different to Eddie.
No different.
And he had credit in the bank. That's the difference. Whereas Iraola hasn't really got that. So we knew that he would come good. But Iraola, his first 7 games, 4 of which have been against the top 6, you know, the big 6. The other 2 were against teams that were in the top 6
when
at the time.
Yeah.
And then the other game against Brentford was a team that...
They were unbeaten when we played them.
Yeah, unbeaten when we played them. And we only dropped points due to a stupid slip at the end. So we've got to put it into perspective. We really have. And the baseline tracker table at the start of the show exemplifies like where we're really at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think if you want to... criticise this performance against Arsenal and you go off just that one game, then I 100% agree.
Got you.
If you look at a bigger picture of things, it's absolutely moronic to suggest that we should look at elsewhere or we made a mistake or whatever. You don't need to go over the fixtures again, how horrific they've been. And we've got a new manager, first time, you know, manager of this country, who's literally had to go, right, you know, all that style and philosophy and system you had last season, we're going to do the complete opposite. right, and now you've got to make sure that you're perfect at it against the big boys straight away. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. We've had players come in and out with injuries all the time. We still haven't replaced Jefferson Lerma because Tyler Adams' injury, which is, can't get me head round. It's just been, he hadn't even got his assistant manager next to him, you know, which is just crazy. And yeah, the amount of things that, I mean, you cannot, I mean, getting in a new manager with a completely new philosophy and then going, nah, you know what? After them fixtures, the worst fixtures you could get, I mean, they're horrific.
Yeah.
And he's only got 3 points. Get him out. It's absolutely outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. I think we went 9 games without a win under O'Neill.
Yeah, and what...
barely having a shot.
What I don't understand is that there are some fans out there that were, I would call, blindly loyal, but let's just like discount that and just say loyal, fair play for being loyal, towards Gary O'Neill after that horrible run. But these same fans are also being really impatient with Andoni Iraola, you know, given all these factors that that you've said. Like you say, I mean, I'll tell you something. I was in the... this sounds so la-di-da. I was having breakfast at the Hilton Hotel on Saturday. It was my...
this is what our club's come to, isn't
it? It is.
You're buying right into it, aren't you? Yeah.
It was my sister's birthday, big birthday. She won't want me to say the number 50. And in there was a guy in an AFCB training top, just like, and he ran out to walk his dog. And it was PS on his tracksuit. And that's the same tracksuit that Andoni Iraola...
yeah,
was mistakenly wearing at the Stoke press conference. And PS are the initials of his assistant that is not yet assistant, but hopefully he's kind of on the scene and ready to
take up
the position, because it is ludicrous, isn't it? And like you said on Twitter, it's just mad. If this happened to anyone else, any other club in the Premier League, whereby the assistant manager, the visa hadn't gone through or whatever,
they'd have made sure it
they'd be up for all.
Yeah, they'd have made sure it got through, because they would have just like pushed it. Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, no, I know. There's just so many things, mate. And I think, yeah, Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, you got to have a bit of a laugh on there sometimes. And I do it a lot with Fraser, trust me.
Do you?
Yeah. The O'Neill thing, I remember putting it, who did they play in the cup? Ipswich. They went 2-0 up, so I just tweeted, oh, nothing go wrong here, because we've, you know, and it obviously ended up did, makes me look all right for that period. But then equally, straight after this game, I went, O'Neill's laughing at me.
Yeah,
just having a laugh. Oh, Lord, there's no way when we play Wolves, by the way, I'm giving him any stick.
No.
He come in as a rookie, really. He got given the job and bloody kept us up. Yeah. Like, I would always caveat when people say, he saved us, miracle. We weren't in the bottom when he got the job. We were unbeaten for ages when he was interim. He was brilliant interim, by the way. Yeah. We were like eighth or something. He took us to 20th. He took us there, and then he managed to just about get us out.
War chest in January.
Yeah, with the January war chest. And don't get me wrong, he still, you know, tick, remit. We've said that loads of times. But I'm only having a laugh. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't dislike the guy. I think he's comes across well. I think he's got some big results. Got some big results for us when needed. And he's just got a big one for Wolves. A fair play. But, you know, are we going to be doing this every week now? So if we win at Everton, I think they've got Villa. If we beat Everton and they lose, we've got to say, oh, we won 0-0, so now we made the right decision. That's absolutely ridiculous. He's going to win football matches. The squad, the Wolves have got, imagine if they don't win a game. Of course he's going to win a game.
I've got...
and Andoni will win games. Don't worry about it.
I've got news for people who are watching or listening. Football never finishes. It never finishes. It just goes on and on. No one will ever win the football. I sound like that David Mitchell sketch, don't I? But it's absolutely true. And look, we've got to judge it on a longer term basis. So people making knee jerk reactions now. I think even on AFTV, I saw an interview or read a headline like, "Soon I'll be saying Andoni out." Like, hold your horses a little bit. I think we're in a position now whereby the recruitment team are now in a position to sign players for a clear identity. Where previously, I don't think we really knew what our identity was. But that said, whether this recruitment has been any good or not remains to be seen, because some of the players haven't exactly hit the ground running. We certainly hope they will do. And let's not forget also that, look, Gary O'Neill had this war chest in January, and it took, like, February wasn't perfect. We did get a draw against Newcastle. We also got a win at faltering Wolves, a couple of losses chucked in there as well. So he didn't exactly have much time with his players. Andoni Iraola's only had players through the door like only in the last month. There was like a few days before the transfer window closed, he was getting new players in that he had to integrate when the season had already started. So we got to cut them a little bit of slack. And also, we have been playing without Lerma, our you know, our position that we really need someone of some caliber to fill. I know that Lewis Kirk and Joe Rothwell have been doing their best to fill that position, but is it really them?
No,
I'm not too sure. And that, you know, and that's not on Andoni. That's probably on the recruitment team more than anything.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, we obviously brought someone in that's got some injury problems in Tyler Adams, because we did try to address it, but obviously his injury problems are still creeping in. And then, yeah, Andoni's watched the season go, actually, I quite trust Anthony. I'll play Anthony. And then we've obviously decided that remains to be seen. I'm not going to judge that yet, whether that was a good call. And then he said, look, we've brought in a better player here in Sinisterra, but he's going to Colombia now. Oh, okay. He can't play in that cup game. Right, okay. So he's barely had much time to get him involved. So we're almost like a player down in a weird way, because he was trusting Jane Anthony for a bit. Watara's been out, as we said, just come back. I think, yeah, and like you say, the window helped in January last season. Also, I think Tav come back at a really good point, that he was really helped us, because O'Neill was doing it without Tav and we all knew how good he was. So credit to us for that. But yeah, I just think no one, if you quite liked what O'Neill was doing, then credit, that's fine. That's your opinion. Yeah. Absolutely fine. But
We're all thankful for what you did.
No one judged Gary O'Neill after seven games.
No.
No one judged him after seven games. We judged him after a long, long period. And then a season ending and going, right, where are we at? What can we spend? What do we want to do? Blah, blah, blah. You can't judge him. You can't judge any of it, really. I think you can't judge Sinisterra in for Anthony yet. You can't judge any of... It's so early and we've had horrible games. You can't judge anything yet. And if you're going to completely change your style, getting a manager that's very highly thought of, what I believe, personal opinion, is a better coach than the one we had before. I might be wrong. That's my opinion. I think he's a better coach and I think he's got the CV to prove that. But I certainly won't be judging him for a while. Yeah, it would be absolutely crazy.
Yeah, he certainly needs to be given time. One thing that we could do as fans is get behind the team. And I'm finding this week in, week out, the atmosphere at Dean Court, it's not...
Christ. But yeah, at least it's quite hard when you've got Arsenal for him.
I like the fact that they're trying to generate atmosphere, and also appreciate what they're trying to do. But I do feel as though there are so, I've said this before, so many passive supporters,
of course, yeah,
in the North Stand that you always feel embarrassed to sing, because you're singing on your own.
Mm-hmm. Realm.
And they want to be part of the atmosphere, but they don't want to be kind of involved in it. I just hope that when the new stadium happens, they acknowledge where they're at in terms of the vocality of their support for Bournemouth, and maybe just think, actually, like, I'll admire it from another stand, and all the singers come together, because football can, you know, the crowd can be a 12th man, and we call. Sometimes we really need it, but I'm struggling at the moment. We've possibly got the worst, one of the worst atmospheres in the league.
We're up there. I think there's a few at home, but yeah, we're up there. I think, yes, it's a difficult one. I think that, yeah, I'm obviously joking aside, I think that it's not for me, the little drum thing at the start, but I won't complain about things like that, because in my opinion, they're trying, and that's trial and error. You can't say, oh, we need something for the atmosphere, try something, and go, that's crap. Well, they've had to try it, haven't they? So that's okay.
One thing that I did before the previous game, what was it, Chelsea, the raising of the flag, I just thought, how could that ever, what are we all supposed to, what are we supposed to do?
I wonder if we'll have the fruit machine again, because we can't do it, because we haven't won.
Yeah.
Because it does win, doesn't it? And as was a laugh. But yeah, I don't mind things like that, as well as little gimmicky things. But it'll be interesting in the next, obviously we've got away game first, in the next two home games, obviously there's a cup game as well that we've got at home. But being Wolves and Burnley, no disrespect to them teams, by the way, but you wouldn't expect them to have as many away fans in the home end, because it's Burnley. Interesting, I'm a season ticket holder, by the way, and I got a nice little email. It was a decent discount for hospitality if I wanted it. I can keep my season ticket seat. All the season ticket holders got it, I believe, almost. And then use hospitality for like £75 or something. It's only available for Burnley and Wolves. It almost makes me think they can't sell their ones. Didn't get offered it for Arsenal, weird. Burnley and Wolves, not sure if the ownership will like them games, but it might be better in the atmosphere, because I can't see them being scattered with Burnley and Wolves fans, personally. But,
you know what, that upgrade is actually not
bad, decent price.
Compared to if you're getting hospitality in the like top floor restaurant or whatever, where it's near £300.
Yeah.
I think you get a rival Prosecco and stuff like that. Mm. But this one is at the Cherry Orchard, which is the old 1910, so there are no windows onto the ground or anything like that. However, you've got your pre-match entertainment. You get a program with it, three-course meal, £75. That's not
it's not bad. It's just not, I mean, for me personally, not for me. I've done it now and again. Saturday. I don't know if the last time I was Swansea with you, wasn't it? Mm. But I my whole thing is I like having, you know, a few beers and food and that with my mates, and a lot of my mates like yourself are not seeing together, so I would just be doing our meeting. So
that said, if anyone's a sponsor and wants to invite us along, we'd be more than
happy in there, baby. Yeah, get me in there. No, it's yeah, it is what it is. But it will be interesting. Just touch on the atmosphere, what it's like in the next couple of home games, because yeah, they're big games as well. And they're games that, because I think they're always, not this right, I think there's always a sense of, you know, when you go behind against a team like an Arsenal, everyone kind of goes, oh, this is over. Whereas in them sort of games, we've got to win the entire, so it might help.
We all know that. We all know that Iraola is a good manager. We all know that he is. But do we have players that are good enough to fit his system? Because I think Paul Kenwood tweeted it, a couple of others that I've been reading, because they've said they've seen some really bad performances from some players, which they find really baffling. Have we got technically good enough players to do this?
I think we have. I mean, bloody hell, there's cost a lot of money. So you'd be start questioning recruitment and stuff, and they're not. But I think they are good players. I think a lot of them are young. A lot of them are new to England as well. So I think it will take a bit of time. I mean, Zabani, Kirkes, they've only just come in and they're bloody kids, really. Neither of them had to be registered. Even, you know, Ouattara, Traore, they're still relatively young, and also, you know, it's not their first language. They're not fluent at all. So, yeah, it still remains to be seen on that. I think the frustrating thing is so many of them have picked up injuries along the way already. It's only really Kirkes that hasn't. I mean, Zabani, when he first came in, was injured, wasn't he? So, yeah, it'll take a bit of time, but I do think we've got players. I think it's just unfortunate that the way we're playing, you're going to get caught, especially for that middle of the pitch, and the one position that we haven't got a player in because he's injured is that defensive midfield role, which I think Lewis has done his best at. But yeah, it's not his natural position to be like that kind of destroyer in there, which Adams would be a bit better as. And probably I'd probably argue that our most exciting signing was Alex Scott, and he's injured. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time. I think I wouldn't judge any of the new signings yet. I think he provided a great moment at Tottenham, but I'm not convinced by early signs of Ouattara. I'm not convinced with early signs of Traore. I'm not fully convinced with early signs of Kluivert. That's the personal opinion. I think things.
We said Jayden Anthony back to Leeds. Out to Leeds.
Yeah, since it's there, I couldn't judge at all because I haven't seen him. He hadn't started a game, so wait and see on that. But Aarons, I'm happy with. I think he's going to get better. Same with Kirke. Same with Zabali. I like all them players. I like Semenyo from the little bits I've seen. So I think in general, I think we've got some. We've done all right, but we're probably looking at it now, and with a few little injuries, you probably think we're a little bit unbalanced. We've signed some bloody good players, but you know, Kirkus gets injured, we haven't got anyone. We haven't got centre half on the bench at the moment because of a few injuries. We were all worried about Solanke so much when you feel, well, we got a good backup. Whereas out wide, we've got hundreds. So yeah, maybe a little bit imbalanced, but yeah, we'll see. It's only really Adams and Scott, because I'm refusing to count Mark Holmes and Fredericks as injured players. We have a player called Brian Fredericks in the football club, by the way. So yeah, I think at the moment we haven't got loads out now, but what you got to remember is a lot of them have been out and are coming back. And I think after this Everton game, international break, is frustrating because people like Sinisterra are going to go away again, and you just sort of. But it's too early to judge any of this.
I chatted after the game to Jules from AFCV and judges. Judge Jules, actually. They should do a show.
Jules Jill.
Fat AFTV, if you watch him. But they were saying that I was surprised that you played like you did against us. There are teams that have been more pragmatic and, you know, got more results. And I'm thinking, oh, should have we done that? Does Iraola have that in his locker? But then I think about it. I think there are more not good teams in the Premier League than good teams.
Mm.
Therefore, if you're going to play that style, you'll play, you know, rather than be pragmatic for all 19 fixtures, as it transpires to be, you might as well play that way, try to get the results against the teams that you know you can beat, or, you know, are beatable, which is a terrible thing to say in the Premier League, rather than go pragmatic and be negative against the likes of, you know, your Evertons and all the, because do remember, right, under Gary O'Neill, and not to harp back to it, some of the results that we got, right, and people are starting to lose their heads now, right? Lost at home to Palace, lost at home to Saints, capitulated against Leeds, drew with Forest, capitulated in the cup at home against Burnley, got battered on our own turf against West Ham at home, got beaten at ease at Crystal Palace, lost on the final day of the season to a poor Everton. And what people are suggesting that Andoni Iraola is running out of time in his brand new job. Like, I'm not being funny. Like, look at the calibre of teams that we've played. It's okay.
Yes, kind of.
I think the next three... Look, I'm not saying people can't be frustrated because I was so frustrated. So the next three games are going to be key. Look, the game we get at Goodison Park next week, for me, feels bloody massive.
Yeah, it's big. It's big.
It's massive.
Yeah, it's a big game and we don't do well at Goodison. But yeah, it's a big one. It's probably amplified by the fact they just lost to Luton at home. Mm. Yeah, a big game. But yeah, like you said, and you said with the approach and stuff, I always think that if he's clearly got a philosophy and a style, if he suddenly tells them we can't do that in this game, that's telling the players, I didn't even believe in my own philosophy because you've lost a few football matches. You could be clever and tweak a few bits, and I think you alluded to it earlier. We did try to, because then fullbacks weren't bumming on as much. So there were a little... But you don't change your whole style for one football match if you believe in it enough. But yeah, I saw some people saying that very reactionary. I mean, it was an awful game. There's people saying it was like, that's the worst performance we've had since Eddie or something. And I was thinking, did you go to the games last season? Do you want a Palace away, by the way? And at home, actually. And then, bloody, the West Ham game's home and away. Jesus Christ, I wanted to rip my own eyes out.
There were people on the forums and stuff that are loyal to Gary O'Neill and they didn't want to see the back of him. But surely, if loyalty's in your DNA, then surely you should be back in Andoni, unless there's another reason why you're mates with Gary O'Neill. So I can understand why.
And you can, like, any style you want to like. That's your opinion. That's your choice. Because I know there's certain people that, like, neutrals, that don't like watching, say, Man City, for example, because they find it boring. Because they just keep the ball and it's like, so, and people prefer, like, Liverpool, say, who are a bit more go for it. But then other people love the tactical style of, blah, blah. And if you like, there's a lot in, like, defending and bodies on the line. There's some games where, do you remember Cookie at Fulham? Yeah. That them two, them double block. Oh, there's something beautiful about that. And some people love a team that are so hard to break down and nick games 1-0. And that's absolutely fine. Me personally, last season I was like, I can't watch this. This is doing my head in.
Well, you know, the one thing that gives me a fair bit of solace, there were times where as fans we would tearing our hair out last season at some of the performances, like you just said.
Yeah.
And then I would tune into AFCB TV on to see Gary's post-match reaction, and it would be like he's watched a different game.
Yeah.
And
fans have said similar.
He would be saying things that, it's like, hang on, like, we don't feel that. You're looking at stats, but the eye test did not show that to be the case. Whereas, I think under Iraola, when I've seen him, he's saying, he's feeling, like, he's like a fan. He's saying exactly the same things as I'm thinking.
He comes straight after the game and said, that's the worst we've been.
And that's 100%.
And we weren't enough, blah, blah, blah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's good that he's realising this kind of stuff. It's not like he's brainwashing us with some stats that show that we were competitive and all these kind of keywords that we had last season. He knows that that was poor. But just because it was poor, let's not lose our heads over it.
Yeah, and it's a balance of going, look at the opposition, obviously, like we've been saying, and these are more winnable games, etc. But equally, also going, if we play like we did against Arsenal against Everton, we could still lose that game because we were rubbish. So, yeah, in terms of the Arsenal game, we were absolutely awful. But in terms of us going forward, I'm all right.
Yeah, and then look, we will look so stupid if we lose to Everton next week. Of course we will, but...
If we play like that, we will lose to Everton.
That's the nature of being a football fan. I think some people think that all opinions have to be set in stone. But it can be fluid, right? It can be fluid. So just because you're thinking one thing this week, it doesn't mean you can't think something different next week. And, you know, that's what we're saying. Like, maybe next week we'll see something really bad.
Yeah.
And then we'll be like, hang on, there is some naivety here. But, you know, we've got to go with him at the moment. And we've seen promising signs. And we haven't played a side that is one of the teams that we've been targeting, have we really? So, and we all knew this start was horrendous. And now that the start has proven to be horrendous, although we're 3 points up on last season, we're still moaning. There's a little bit of entitlement with some fans, I have to say. I
think the money that we spent is a big part of it.
Of course, it's absolutely part of it. But
there's a lot of players that have spent a lot of money on that aren't involved at the moment. That, you know, you've got to give the, as much as we're talking about Iraola a lot, you've got to give these players time. I mean, bloody hell! I mean, some of the back four, or three of them, are virtually brand new. You know what I mean? You've got to give them a little bit of time. They really, none of them play together. And then, you know, it's little things that don't help. But then Lloyd Kelly thing. Oh, I tell you what, he's had two brilliant games. He's back. This is great. This is Lloyd Kelly injured. And you go, oh, come on. It's frustrating. Just give it a bit of time.
Yeah, we just need a win, because I think there's a kind of brewing sentiment of almost resentment and frustration, like I've said, like going around the club at the moment. And a win would soothe all that. A lot of people are getting narky about seats, hospitality, all this kind of stuff. A few people online. And then, the football situation, of course, doesn't help. But once we win a game, just lift this cloud and look. We need to get behind them at Everton, like, properly loud. And I really hope that the classic AFC Bournemouth away atmosphere. Do you remember Brentford? It was brilliant. Mm. I thought our fans were absolutely superb. I want to see that. I really want some of these chants. I mean, are we the Premier League team with the least chance for our own players in? Because we've barely got any. There were some lads at the back of the North Stand singing, "Oh, I want to dance with Zabani."
Love that.
Let's sing it. Let's get beyond. Don't be one of those fans like, well, that's crap. That's cringe.
Unless it's the Senesi chant.
Even that, I'll get. But it doesn't rhyme. It doesn't make sense.
Most embarrassing song I've ever heard in my life.
It's nonsensical. It's terrible. But I'll sing it because it's getting behind us. And I expect you to
as well.
Go. No. Keep them all.
We might as well. We've got Watara. That rhymes. We're idiots.
More.
We might as well. I just feel for Senesi because his name could rhyme with so many things. Yeah. Actually make a charm for him. But anyway.
Is this an idea?
No,
because this is an idea. I've seen this once on another YouTube channel. They have a cabaret stage, right? They have a cabaret thing.
What are you doing?
Any local cabaret stage venues, just give us a shout. And they get some guy, like, I'm sensing like Tiggs, right? I'm sensing Tiggs Snacky.
Yeah, put on Tiggs. Yeah.
He would be good at this, right? You give him a mic, we can dress him up or whatever. And then, not in drag or anything, just, what we'll do is get people to send in their song suggestions, right? For anyone, and get him to sing it and help it take off. Yes, we'll become the laughing stock of the Premier League on YouTube. It's fine. We've got Tom already. We're already the laughing stock.
Exactly.
But is that an idea? Yes? No? Because we need to improve this atmosphere. We need to get more songs. Let's start this thing.
Yeah.
Because what I hate on Twitter is I'm going off on one now.
Yeah.
Hate on Twitter where people just write tweets out to songs. One, I don't even know what song it's to. Like, what's the melody? Yeah. There's always someone that writes like a syllable out of place or stuff that doesn't rhyme. There was some guy that did one the other day. It just, like, who was that? It was that musical artist who rhymed Kodak with Kodak.
Oh, is that Pitbull?
Pitbull.
Yeah.
It was one that used the same word twice. Like, it rhymes because it is the same word. Let's now bring this to life. Indeed. Let's start singing some songs. We need 3 points out, don't we? God, we're going off on one.
I don't want to.
You don't want to go to Everton?
I'm so scared of those.
You're going to be.
I'm in that zone at the moment. Oh, I'll beat that. I'm in that zone at the moment, I think. It's early in the week, mate. And just really a bit flat after that. But yeah, we'll soon come around. Once we're previewing it and stuff, start thinking, right, come on, let's believe. But
Let's believe.
Go ahead.
It's a good sign. It's a good sign.
I'm just tired.
Thank you for listening. Well done, Arsenal. Kai Havertz scores again.
That's Bournemouth lose again.
Come on, Bournemouth. We'll be back. We'll be fine.
Billy, left footed. It's a cheeky one. Square! And smashed in! Kiefer Moore! A brilliantly worked set piece. Skullduggery and winkery. Kiefer Moore. 1-0.
Podcast Network.